Hey, Happy Friday. This week, Windows K2 is here to win back users for Windows, USB-C becomes mandatory for laptops in the EU, and Realme and OnePlus merge. Welcome to the Friday Checkout. This video is sponsored by Nebula. Okay, for my first story of the week, Microsoft is working on something called Windows K2. Last month, the Windows blog published a post about their newfound commitment to Windows quality, with promises to bring back highly requested features like being able to move the taskbar around, but also things like being more thoughtful about integrating AI. But this week, with Windows K2, we not only got a new name, but also a lot more information about what exactly is planned. An excellent in-depth report by Windows Central, which I've linked to down below, says that this is Microsoft's big plan to save Windows 11 and to win back trust from users. To be clear, K2 is not a specific version of Windows, but rather a big internal push to, I guess, de-shitify Windows with some very concrete steps in mind. These include speeding up file navigation and processing in File Explorer, including instant file name search, improving Windows updates so that restart is only necessary once a month, rebuilding the start menu from scratch with WinUI 3 natively, hallelujah, removing ads from the start menu, stopping MSN from appearing by default in the widgets board, and improving gaming performance with SteamOS as the benchmark that they want to match, and many other small things. And yes, the irony isn't lost on me that SteamOS, which runs Windows games through a compatibility layer, is the benchmark for Windows performance. Anyway, it's easy to make fun of a lot of this, even though these are, I guess, more or less the words that most Windows users would want to hear. Now, will Microsoft actually follow through on these thoughts? We'll have to wait and see, but here's what Zach Bowden had to say about it for now. Quote, "Of course, what Microsoft says externally isn't always reflective of what it's really thinking internally, but in this case, my sources say that the company is serious about turning Windows 11 into a platform that people are proud to use by the end of 2026 and into 2027. And to be fair, I believe Zach here because I think Microsoft doesn't really have a choice. Just looking at the Steam hardware survey, for example, Linux is now comfortably over 5%, while just 4 months ago it was still only at 3%, so the house really seems to be catching fire now. Okay, for my second story of the week, it's another day, which means there's yet another USB-C directive from the EU upon us, and this time it's for laptops. That's right, you can say goodbye to all of these absolute abominations because a new standard is now in town. The same directive that made USB-C mandatory for phones earlier has just launched for laptops on the 28th of April this week. Now, many articles that I've seen claim that this is only for laptops until 100 watts, but I don't think that's actually true. The official text now specifically says that devices must incorporate the harmonized charging solution up to their maximum charging power or up to 240 watts. And 240 watts is, of course, the highest possible spec that USB-C can deliver right now. Importantly, other types of chargers are still going to allow to be used, but the directive says that until 240 watts, all new devices must offer USB-C charging at least as an option at equivalent speeds, which means most brands will probably just go USB-C only instead of doing both types at that point. So as an example, if you're Apple, you can still make a MacBook with both MagSafe and USB-C, but USB-C charging has to be as fast as MagSafe at least. Laptop makers would also be forced to offer a version of their laptops without a charger included at all, and they'd also have to label the power input into their devices more clearly so that the user could actually go and buy a compatible charger on their own if they wanted to. Now, I have to say, I think initially, especially for non-technical users, this might be a little bit confusing because they will have to learn what power input their device needs and which exact charger they can pair with it, and that might lead to some unhappy customers for sure, but overall, in the long term, with clearer labeling and everything, I think this is a win overall. I'm pro USB-C everything. Okay, and for my third story of the week, a new report by the pretty reliable Digital Chat Station claims that OnePlus and Realme are apparently merging. After a long back and forth of what to shut down and what to consolidate, this is the final solution that the teams have come up with. The report says that the two brands will merge their domestic and global operations, and that they'll also have shared product development strategies, but they will keep their separate brands to consumers. That is better than a partial or a full shutdown, which were also in the cards apparently, so I guess given the circumstances, this is good news. Okay, and as for our stonks section, I'm trying something new. I added a new column that shows the change over 1 year as well, so you can see a bit more of a long-term context, not just a weekly one. And if I filter by that, I can see that the biggest winners this year are chip companies, and especially memory chip companies, including SanDisk at an insane 3,300% in a year. But the fellow memory chip makers SK Hynix and Micron aren't far behind either, while one company that you might not expect to be here is Siemens Energy at 167%. So it looks like at least a single non-AI related company made it to the top charts, right? Nope. Among other things, Siemens built gas turbines, which AI companies slap next to their data centers to generate electricity because their local grids just can't supply them sufficiently. Wild times. In other words, essentially, the whole market has been driven by AI over the last year. Okay, and as for our release monitor, we'll start with the much-hyped new Steam Controller by Valve. This adds two trackpads conveniently under your thumbs to make input easier. It should be pretty easy to repair, including simple battery replacements, and it keeps pretty much the same layout as the Steam Deck, so it should be pretty easy to use with tons of existing PC games. At $99, it is on the pricey side, but loads of people will probably love it anyway. Meanwhile, a much more confusing release is the new Moto Razr, Razr Plus, and Razr Ultra, all of which are just tiny spec bumps over their predecessors. The Ultra, for example, features the exact same chip as last year and only gets the tiniest of spec bumps, like a very slightly improved camera and 300 mAh of extra battery. These are probably still very good phones, but the last generation of the Razr Ultra, for example, at the time of writing cost basically half as much as the new one, so that makes the new models a pretty tough sell. Moving on, the DJI Mic Mini 2 officially launched this week, including some very cute colors and some very aggressive prices. A single transmitter is only $36, while a full kit with two transmitters and the receiver and the case only costs $99. These are absolutely tiny and they should still sound pretty good with 24-bit audio, though as usual they don't seem to be launching in the US just yet. Okay, and moving on to the brief, Google Translate launched a new feature called Pronunciation Practice. You can get the system to not only read foreign languages out loud for you, but now it can also tell you if your pronunciation of it was right. Actually, pretty cool. Then, another nice Google update is that picture-in-picture mode is coming to all YouTube viewers, not just those paying for premium. Nice. And last in our Google updates is that new icons are coming for the firm's products as well. I have to say, I'm not a fan of the kind of gradient look personally, but at least we get distinct colors again instead of every icon looking exactly the same like they do right now. Moving on to news that made me question my sanity, SoftBank is creating a robotics company that builds data centers and is already eyeing a $100 billion IPO. The firm will be called Rose AI. It wants to make a data center construction in the US more efficient using automation, and it wants to IPO by the second half of 2026. Yeah, a non-existent firm going from zero to $100 billion IPO in under 1 year smells kinda bubbly to me. And still with AI, China this week has officially banned Meta's acquisition of Manus AI on national security grounds. Meta will not be allowed to buy them for $2 billion like they plan to, and this came after the Chinese government told the leaders of Manus that they were restricted from leaving China until the probe was wrapped up. Well, I guess now that the probe is over, they can leave again, it's just that they're $2 billion short. And talking of national security, we just learned that Wero, the supposed champion of European sovereign payments, apparently uses Amazon's AWS servers to operate. Oops. At least they've now vowed to change this, but it seems pretty weird that they chose this dependence in the first place. It reminds me of this time when I got an email from this group I will not name that was also claiming to be replacing US tech companies, and they sent me press images via a Google Drive link. Like, you had one job. Anyway, next, remember how last week we talked about CATL ramping up sodium iron batteries for cars? Well, this week, the world's largest battery producer signed a massive 60 gigawatt hour deal for their new batteries. The deal is meant for energy storage, so think those grid-scale battery parks that can power whole neighborhoods, and 60 gigawatt hours is incredibly ambitious. It is equivalent to half of all energy storage batteries that CATL delivered in 2025, and CATL is going to deliver this to a single customer over just 3 years. It sounds like sodium-ion batteries might have finally achieved some sort of a breakthrough, and they'll become real competitors to lithium-ion batteries soon. And then here's another fun story. The Fairphone 3 and 3 Plus are about to receive their final software updates 7 years in, which is 2 years longer than they originally promised. But what I found the most interesting is that 40% of the phones that they sold are still in active use today, according to Fairphone. That is pretty remarkable for a fairly low-end 6 to 7 year old phone. Now, I actually looked up which Android versions each Fairphone model was on, and the 3 seems to be stuck on Android 13, while only the newer models are on 15 and 16. So I guess security patches are nice and all, but if Fairphone wants to get into my good books about updates, then they also have to get better at delivering Android version updates. But I guess this also means that many Fairphone customers don't really seem to be caring about those too much. Hey, and here's a random little fact. Did you know that I have a Nokia 3310 tattooed on my leg? It was my first phone ever that I have very strong feelings about, and so I was extremely happy to see that Real Engineering made a whole deep dive into the retro innovations that made it as legendary of a phone as it was. This was the first episode of his new Nebula exclusive series, where he puts electronics under a high-tech CT scanner and does a bunch of fancy 3D modeling to look at their hidden details, and the second episode is all about the iPod. Now, that's a legendary device that I wished I had back then. This is a great series if you want to learn about how your tech actually works. It launched right along with Polymeter's new Nebula exclusive series called A Grand Theory of Xi Jinping, which, as the title suggests, explains what China's premier is actually like, starting with how he grew up. I used to live in China, and so I'm eternally fascinated by this topic, and I think Evan did an excellent job breaking things down in this series. There is Tom Scott's fantastic New England series, which is an episode ahead on the Nebula. There is the Nebula exclusive Day Pass series from Not Just Bikes, where he explores different cities by public transportation. I, of course, also have dozens of exclusive videos and also a Nebula Q&A session at the end of every Friday checkout episode, and I could go on. Nebula has many of my favorite videos from many of my favorite creators, and it features all of this without ads and without low-effort AI slop sprinkled in between. Nebula is fully funded by viewers like you, and this allows us to make more and better content for people who actually care. Best of all, with my link, go.nebula.tv/TFC, which is also linked in the description, you can also get a big discount. Nebula costs just $30 for a full year with my link, instead of the $60 that you'd pay with a regular link, plus we recently also included regional pricing and support for multiple currencies. Oh, and if you absolutely hate ongoing subscriptions, we even have a lifetime offer. With a regular link that is $500, but mine brings that down to $300 as well. So go to go.nebula.tv/TFC or scan the QR code on screen, and I'll see you over there.